Canucks Central Tuesday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. This hour of Canucks Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Fast lunch doesn't have to mean fast food. Satisfy your midday cravings by choosing a main side and drink for only $15. Served in 20 minutes or less at Boston Pizza. It is the eve of the Stanley Cup Final, Sat.
Yeah.
And, the NHL world is congregated into Edmonton.
Yes, again.
Hey, good to be in Edmonton in June rather than January.
I guess. No doubt. Yeah.
You know that well.
I know that well. Yeah. I've spent some time in that region.
We're going to talk a lot about the Stanley Cup Final today. Frank Saravalli is going to join us. He is in Edmonton. And also, Florida Hockey Now's George Richards going to join us, get the Florida perspective. Tyler Yaremchuk of Oilers Nation going to give us the Oilers perspective a little bit later on in the show. So we will fully break down the rematch of the 2024 Stanley Cup Final today on the eve of Game 1 tomorrow in Edmonton. But let's get to it. We've got Canucks news. It's the Open.
Welcome to the Open.
Oh, that's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Yes, the Open on Canucks Central, where we bring the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. The latest being the Canucks have signed Derek Forbert to a one-year extension at $2 million. Sat, you were tweeting about this a little bit earlier. This has been speculated. Would the Canucks bring back Forbert? He had the tough injury to end the year, but he was really good for the Canucks in the overall. And I guess, you know, before we get into Forbert and what he brings, it kind of feels like, from a team perspective, they're pretty much set on the back end going into the offseason now.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, they have surplus.
Yeah.
You know, as far as young defensemen go. But the good thing with their young defensemen is, like, the ones they want to keep are not waiver eligible anyways. So, yeah, you know, it's fine. You have the depth. And I know a lot of people have been kind of the opinion now, because that Forbert has now been signed, it now signals, like Fish Dancer was saying in the text inbox and others, that it signals a trade. And maybe they do end up trading a defenseman. We've talked about this. But I think Forbert coming back was something that they were looking to do well before the season even ended. And yeah, whether they trade defenseman or not, he was going to come back. And whether they trade a young defenseman or not, they were going to bring a veteran in, regardless of Forbert being that guy or not. They were always going to have a veteran in. So I'm not sure this changes the equation at all, yeah, as far as like what they're going to do with the back end. But you're right, like, they're set on the blue line. The only thing they needed was a depth veteran guy, yeah, like a Forbert type, to tie them over as DPD, Vilander, learn to get experience so they can grow into those PK roles in a year or so.
You've got Hughes Roenick, Marcus Pettersson, Tyler Myers, Forbert and Mancini, Willander, and obviously Elias Pettersson. So mm-hmm, there's your eight, yeah, right? I'm excited about Elias Pettersson and Willander and Mancini as everybody is, but it just wouldn't be smart to go into the year without some kind of veteran cover. You have to know that young players don't always move on a, you know, steady trajectory upwards in their careers. The old cliche is, you know, development is not linear. And so you want some cover. You want some veteran cover. And also to, you know, let everybody know, especially the young guys, like, there is still a veteran guy that we trust here to have that spot if you're not ready to go in September.
You need to have the competition, and you, yeah, need the veteran leadership. I think that's something he also brings, but he's 100%. Legitimately a really good penalty killer. He was one of the best penalty killers in the league last year.
It was our biggest take on Derek Forbert July 1. Like, wow, okay, they got a penalty kill specialist, yeah, here to fill out their third pair.
And it was no coincidence that when he was in the lineup, the Canucks PK was aces.
Yeah.
There's no coincidence. Like, he was spectacular. So I think he not only brings depth, like, he brings legitimate, you know, leadership qualities, but a legitimate penalty killer. Like, there may not be a penalty killer on that team that's better than Derek Forbert.
Yeah.
That's a really good skill to have, right? And we saw how he defends in his own end. And when it comes to how he handles the puck, he can make the simple play fine. He made some nice plays throughout the year. We joked about it too, that, you know, he actually has a little skill in his locker that, yes, he pulls out every once in a while, and he pulls a trick out of his sleeve. So, I mean, like, he's a savvy, cagey vet, who brings a lot of qualities. And I think he's the perfect type of defenseman to have. And the thing is, if DPD and Vilander are great, guess what? He'll be out of the lineup. You know what I mean? Like, you can easily move off if you had to. And the other thing is, injuries always happen.
Yes.
This whole notion that, you know, all these
Forsberg
guys
hasn't
be
played a lot of full seasons in his career.
Bingo. And look at Hronek. He's had lots of injuries. Quinn Hughes have had some injuries here and there. We saw last year, for instance, Marcus Pettersson may miss some time. You know, Myers has been healthy, but he's, you know, every once in a while, maybe something happens with him. Like, injuries always happen. Even 2 years ago when the Canucks were healthy, so to speak, when they made the playoffs, they still had Carson Soucy miss half the season. Hronek still got banged up. Like, still, things still happened, right?
Guys were hurt as the playoffs began, so it really just created some other issues for the Canucks. And I know, like, the first thought is like, well, they're definitely trading one of these young guys. And, you know, as you mentioned earlier, Seth, they very well might, because that's what the market is going to bear if they have to go out and get, or as they desire to go out and get, a top six. That just might be the cost of doing business as one of their young defensemen. It also seems like that's not the preferred option from the front office, as we've talked with Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin since the season has ended. So it's really going to come down to what the cost is, and ultimately if that is what they have to do to get that top six player. But Mancini, you know, he's played extremely well in this Calder Cup playoff run with Abbotsford. You've had Willander, who's an 11th overall pick, ready to make that jump to pro, just signed his entry-level deal. We'll see what he looks like in September. He will decide how big of a role he has on this team in training camp and how he fares in preseason. But also, DPD can play the right side, as he showcased towards the end of the year, whether it was alongside Forbert or whatever it might have been. So you've got options, and to have the extra veteran cover on the back end is something that, if you have desires of being a playoff team next year, as this team does, is something you absolutely need. And to get it done with Forbert now, I think is good, because it also sets you up for the summer knowing exactly what kind of cap space you're working with to go out and acquire these top six forwards that you desire.
Yeah, and Forbert can play the right side too.
Yeah.
You know, so, and here's the other thing. Like, let's say that as much as we're excited about DPD and Vilander, mm-hmm. what if they show that they may not be quite ready for it, and maybe the best thing for them is to go down and play some games in Abbotsford? And now all of a sudden,
I would have zero issue if Philander starts next year in Abbotsford.
Even, like, I don't think DPD will. Like, I think he's, you know, he's on that trajectory, right? Yeah. But again, like, we've seen this happen before, where a player, there's expectations and he showed very well, and then he shows up and kind of lays a bit of an egg in the next training camp a little bit. It just isn't
sophomore
quite ready
slumps,
for it.
They,
like,
happen.
It's not easy, right? So you can't just expect that things are going to go right. And I thought last year from the Canucks back end, you got some really nice seasons from a few players. Forward was one player. Myers was another guy on the back end. But we know what Myers, year to year, there are some inconsistencies, right? So if he goes through a bad rut, for instance, guess who can play in his spot and handle some bigger minutes if he had to? Derek Forbert. Now you don't have to force Vilander into a position where he has to play in the top four, or he has to play, you know, 21, 22 minutes a night. I think having that also insulates those guys, because the last thing you want is to have your young guys lose confidence too.
Yeah.
And, you know, for all the talk about, yes, give these guys ice time, we just sat here a couple of years ago and talked about how many young guys were rushed and we put into positions where they couldn't develop. And I think having that cover allows those young guys to, you know, develop at their own pace, and you don't have to force them to positions they're not ready for.
So Derek Forbert signed to a one-year, $2 million extension. Canucks defense pretty much set for next season. We'll see if that changes over the course of the summer with any kinds of moves. As Jimmy in Vancouver texts in, listening live on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, 650-650. Trading of one of their young D makes no sense. How will that fetch a top six forward or center? If they want to acquire a center and a top six forward, they will have to make a ballsy move by trading Hronek, maybe even packaged with Demko. That's from Jimmy in Vancouver.
It depends on, you know, teams and what they need.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd say Vilander and DPD are two very highly thought of young defensemen.
Yes.
And teams would want them. Now, Hronek may be more valuable, and we talked about that. Like, do you consider doing that? And it all depends on the right player. Like, for instance, if you could get Martin Aitches straight up for Hronek, again, hypothetically,
yeah,
like, does that not intrigue you?
it at least gives you something to think about.
Right. I know how
Jason Robertson for Filip Ronek.
Yeah, again, hypothetical, and you don't have to answer the question, but it's like that's where you would consider it. But it's also one of those situations where not every team may be looking at Hronik.
Yeah.
Because of the contract and because what they may be looking for. Maybe they have right-hand defensemen. They might be looking for a prospect. Like, for instance, the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah.
Like, for Natchez, for instance. Like, they may prefer Vilander in a prospect and a pick over Hronik, potentially, because they want to sign Brock Nelson and they want to have a young defenseman coming up over time, right?
Because they
have
Kale
McCarr and they have somebody who wants to... So, it all depends on the team, and we'll see ultimately what the Canucks do.
It's definitely going to be an interesting offseason for the Canucks as they look for those top six players. Cap space wise, so after spending $2 million here on Derek Forbert, Puckpedia has the Canucks projected cap space at a little over $12 million and change. They don't obviously have a lot to spend. Their active roster currently has 21 players on it. So this is essentially $12 million for two players, and give or take, depending on your roster moves, you could open up a little bit more should you need to.
Yeah, you can say anywhere from 12 to 13 million is what the Canucks have available to them to sign two players. Now, there are other ways to clear space if you make trades, for instance, but it's like we talked about. If you bring Forbert back, you're going to have between 12 to 13 million.
Yeah.
And you can do quite a bit with 13 million. But it depends on how many big swings you're taking here, right? And ultimately, you know, do they move somebody else off the roster as well? And I think that's something to keep an eye on. As much as we're sitting here talking about the defenseman, and very well, they may trade one of the defensemen because they have, you know, at least on with the prospects. Let's say that Vilander and DPD hit. Well, now you have Kudryavtsev. Now you have Soriminiu. Now they're at least guys who have some value, their assets. Like, what do you do with them long term? You know, so that might be something you may consider down the road, but at the very least, you have some assets to play with. The question I have, though, is do they end up moving a couple forwards, too?
Right.
And I'm not talking about Elias Pettersson.
Somebody in the middle range, like the Hoglanders and Garlands, as we've discussed in the past.
Yeah, and Garland, I'm not so sure I'm seeing it on.
It's right? I just brought it up because he is a year away from unrestricted, but it's a hard player to move, considering you're already sort of missing some top six players and play drivers in your forward group anyways.
Yeah, so I'm not sure I see that now. We'll see how the offseason kind of unfolds here. Hoglander, perhaps, right? So I think they may be in a position where they do a couple things with their forwards as well to clear some more space up. But yeah, they have about 12 to 13 million, which gives them enough flexibility to take on a significant player or two.
Yeah, you could easily bring in a player of, obviously we can all do math, you know, $8-ish million dollars, and then still have $4 million to spend on another middle six type in your group. But the one thing about their cap space, while it's enough to do the business that they have to do, it is in the bottom half of the league as far as projected cap space is concerned. Now, not everybody has pretty much their full roster slotted in already like the Canucks do, aside from the two forwards that they likely need to sign. So it's not as simple as that, but they don't have, you know, they're not amongst the cap space leaders going into the offseason is all I wanted to point out.
Yeah, I mean, a team like, for instance, the Mammoth, they have 21 players on their active roster. And again, like, this is just based on Puckpedia, just filling out roster spots. 21 and they have 20 million.
Yeah.
So I mean, they have lots of flexibility here, right? There are teams that, like even the LA Kings, they have 22 million almost, and they have two spots open.
They could definitely, like, you know, the Kings could go after Marner and still have enough money to sign Vlad Gavrikov, kind of a thing. So it's other teams do have a little bit more buying power than the Canucks do, but the Canucks do have the available cap space to do some of the business that they need to do. And it, you know, considering it's not likely to be, you know, free agent sort of bidding wars that they get into, it's more, they're probably looking at certain players within a certain cap range that they're acquiring from another team that already have a contract. So unless maybe it's a Marco Rossi type who's an RFA. Just something to keep in mind when we talk about the available cap space. The Canucks also have hired, according to reports, Kevin Dean as an assistant coach. He was most recently with the Chicago Blackhawks over the previous three seasons. And prior to that was with the Boston Bruins. And he is going to work the defensive side of the bench for Adam Foote, has prior experience with Derek Forbert. during his time in Boston and is known to be a guy that works really well with young players on the development side as they work into their pro careers.
Yeah, he's a name that you've heard now because Daldy and Drance have talked about it, and you know, Drance had the scoop today on him being the guy, and he fits the mold of what Adam Foote did.
Yeah, which is, you know, as Foote mentioned during his introductory press conference, he still wants to run the defensive side, but he's going to have to find somebody else to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is the guy.
Yeah, so I think he fits that type of role, and I know his name has been out there, and you know, by all accounts, seems like a guy who's very qualified for the position.
Yeah.
And what I had also heard is that, not to say that they're going to be hiring one of the guys that was, you know, finalist for the head coaching jobs, but there's a sense that once Pittsburgh and once Boston get their jobs figured out, that, you know, the Canucks are going to be able to round out their coaching staff.
Still looking for somebody to work on the offensive end of the bench and probably run the power play as well as they go through those parts of their coaching staff. And Adam Foote fills out this staff for the Vancouver Canucks. To the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, and a lot of thoughts as the Canucks get Derek Forbert signed. This one comes from Jeff Rowe. It'd be ideal to add a player without touching the defense. I don't know if that's possible, though. The thing about that, Jeff Rowe, is, you know, it depends what, if it's a trade, negotiations are going to be difficult. Teams are more likely, we're conditioned in the hockey world to understand that teams are more likely to value a defenseman more than a winger. And what are the Canucks' top prospects? What are they? One's a winger and one's a defenseman.
But it also comes down to ultimately the quality of the player they're going after. And as much as, yes, we know we mentioned Natchez yesterday, even Jason Robertson's name came up, and you know, there are other names that have some quality attached to them. Well, you're not getting Martin Natchez unless you're willing to trade one of your top prospects. It'll be similar to what Carolina ended up getting from Dallas. They got Stankoven. It was one of, yeah, you know, their best young prospect, right? Like, we're one of their better young players too. So that's the caliber it took, plus first round draft picks to get. So that's what the ballpark where you're going to have to be in for a Natchez type, even Jason Robertson type. It's a first round pick and one of your top prospects. So that's when you have to consider one of your defensemen. But if we're sitting here and talking about whether it's Pavel Zacha, whether it's Jesperi Kotkaniemi, and I don't think those are names you can dismiss, you know, and they're not going to cost one of your top prospects.
Yeah,
there'll be a pick, sure. Mm-hmm. There'll be some other things, but it's probably not going to cost your top prospect to acquire that. So we'll see ultimately what the Canucks end up landing. They might be in for one of the top guys, but you've been making the point, you know, do they have enough in their arsenal to pull that off?
Well, I mean, if, as we saw some reports today that Utah may be willing to move off their fourth overall pick. We talked to Bill Armstrong about that. He certainly didn't shy away from the idea after the lottery that they might think about trading it. It's not a guarantee. You know, other GMs in the past have said, yeah, they'd be willing to move a top five pick in the right scenario. How many of those right scenarios actually exist?
Yeah,
that's ultimately what it comes down to. But if you're talking about a big time player moving, like a you know, a Martin Natchez or a Jason Robertson, or who knows what kind of names might be out there, could you consider moving a top five pick in a draft that's not as highly touted as certainly next year's draft or other drafts have been in the past? That's something to keep an eye on. But even teams like Montreal, Utah, as we've talked about, they've got a boatload of assets.
Yeah.
You know, losing a prospect to one of their pools is less impactful than the Canucks parting with one of their big prospects, because it's just so much more of a shallow pool they're drawing from.
Yeah, but at the same time, it comes down to what is a league looking for and what do you have?
Yeah.
And the league is always looking for young defensemen that are cheap
and have a right shot.
Yeah. And also, but even a guy like DPD, who's physical, you know, and I'm not saying the Canucks are going to trade those guys, but my point is, as much as, yes, you're right, other teams have better assets, but the Canucks also have the things other teams are looking for,
mm-hmm,
especially on the back end. So that's what makes them a player if they're willing to go that far and trade.
Well, it's funny because, like, you know, we have this discussion often, but like you think back to Valander's draft year, right? And the big discussion was like, oh, they should have drafted Zach Benson, or, you know, there was other players there. Why did they go for the right shot stay at home defenseman? And like, if I were to ballpark it today, like, who has more trade value right now couple years after their draft, Zach Benson or Tom Belander.
Oh, it's easy.
It's Belander, and it's not even a question mark.
It's not even close.
You know?
Now, Benson obviously has shown really well for young players.
He's played NHL games
already, as a teenager, right?
Yes.
2 years, and he's shown really good potential. But I'm not sure he's viewed as, can't-miss cornerstone young player.
Yes.
You know, and maybe people don't view Belander as can't-miss, but the fact that people view him as, hey, at the very least, we're getting a number four defenseman on the right side.
Yeah.
That's hard to find. Whereas Zach Benson, undersized, talented winger, they're not going to have as much value.
There's always going to be questions, and there's just going to be teams in front offices that look at an undersized player, and they're just like, meh.
Yeah. I mean, we've heard it. We've talked to executives. Yes. They're like, hey, if the guys are under a certain height, like, we just don't draft them. We just don't consider getting those guys on board. And you can say it's short-sighted.
Yep.
No pun intended, but it is what it is.
The short jokes will never end on Canuck Central. It's just...
I'm not even trying.
That's the problem. It's just, it happens, you know? all right, into the playoff Central roundup. Josh cut his hair.
Yes.
I did. Yeah. I don't know if that's playoff related.
No. Well, it's... I mean, yeah. It's, I'm not going to say what I said to him.
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that
no?
either.
No? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's left for places where there are no microphones.
Yeah.
But yeah, Josh buzzed his hair today. Or yesterday.
Central roundup.
It was funny. Like, Josh and I played golf yesterday morning, and he had the hair.
He had hair.
And then he shows up to work. I'm like, whoa!
No hair.
Impulse decision. Yeah, there was a gap of 2.5 hours where I didn't see Dan Riccio, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to get a haircut.
He's like, what happened to you?
Yeah, I love that you were like on the train, as you described it, and then you got off the train on your way to work and were just like, you know what? I'm going to go get my haircut, and I'm going to get a buzz cut. And then you got back on the train after. Like, it's just a wild story.
That was what happened.
I can relate, though. Like, when you feel like your hair is getting out of control, you just want to get rid of it, or you need that cut. And you were probably at that point where it made you feel anxious almost a little bit.
Honestly, what happened is I looked in the mirror at the back of my hair before I left home, and I was like, that's gross.
Yeah.
And then instead,
now you're self-conscious about it the whole
time. I overcompensated, maybe.
It looks fine. But I will say, you will fall in love with the low maintenance that is having a buzz cut.
I took a shower. My hair was dry in like 5 seconds.
Oh, really?
It was amazing.
It's very good. All right. Abbotsford Canucks. This is more important than Josh's hair. Drop game 3. 5-2 loss against the Texas Stars yesterday. Pretty wild one. But finally, Abbotsford's PK, which we talked about yesterday with Brandon, and maybe it was a little bit of foreshadowing. The penalty kill for Abbotsford had been on fire all playoff. But yesterday, the Texas Stars got their power play going, and that's essentially what decided the game.
Yeah, now pivotal game 4 coming up tomorrow. You hear it here on Sportsnet 650 Puck Drop coming up just after 5. And it's a big one because I'm not saying the series is going to be over. If they lose, it'll be 2-2. But it's like,
yeah,
you can really take control of the series or come back home being under a lot of pressure.
Yeah, you win one of these games in Texas, and obviously you at least guarantee that you come home with a 3-2 series lead. So that would be ideal. Got to win one of these next two for the Abbotsford Canucks. Finally, we've got Frank Saravalli coming up. He is in Edmonton getting ready for the Stanley Cup final and what is to come over the next couple of days. His take on what's going on there and around the league as well. Guests on Sportsnet 650, call in on the hotline powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. You are listening to Canuck Central.
Hitting the most important topics for Vancouver sports fans. The People's Show with Vic Nizar. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.